following program has been brought to you by Koshan 555. On January 23rd in New York, Koshan 555 kicks off its 10-city national culinary competition promoting heritage breed pigs and breed diversity. The tasting event will challenge five chefs, including Brad Farmery, Peter Hoffman, Bill Telepan, George Mendez, and Sean Rembold, to prepare a menu created from five heritage breed pigs, nose to tail. Pig-loving epicureans will have a chance to sample these dishes along with wines from five different small wineries, as well as the opportunity to help select the king or queen of pork. In addition, guests will be treated to whole pig breakdown demonstrations, followed by a whole roasted heritage breed pig and dessert. General admission tickets start at $125 per person and are available at www.koshan555.com. That's www.koshan555.com.
Hi, this is Bernie Wides
and Carol Butler.
The naturalists.
We have to change the name.
Back
of the
on the air again.
Right.
And it's a cold morning out here in the wilds of Brooklyn, but the sun is shining and it's beautiful. So we're here to talk about a trip that Carol and I and my friend Janet went on. Was it last weekend, Carol? Yeah, I think so.
Yes, last weekend, right?
Yeah.
We all went out to Montauk on a trip sponsored by New York Audubon Society and the Littoral Society.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed at the elegant Montauk Manor.
Right.
Right? And there was a lot of snow. And it snowed Saturday night. Again, we went out Friday. But it was very nice. This was led by people who've taken led trips out there many times and have taken groups all over. Bernie has traveled with them, and he'll tell you more about them. But we you'll see on the website, we walked through the woods in the snow. It was just beautiful. We went to the beach to look for harbor seals, which were not there. Because it was high tide, although people claimed they saw a harbor seal out in the water. I did not see it, but hey, they were around. They do come to that part of Long Island in the winter. I have a cold, so you're here. I'm sorry about this. So why don't you tell about the group, because you've traveled. You've gone to where with Mickey and Don?
I went with Mickey to the Galapagos. Mm. And by the way, his name is Mickey Cohen or Mickey Maxwell Cohen. Probably his name was Maxwell, and Mickey probably became his easily handled name. But
right.
I'll have to ask him when I see him again. And in fact, Mickey is going to be on in 3 weeks, and he's going to do two shows.
In two weeks, right.
This week and next week, the week after.
Right.
Okay. I think it's the first week in February. I'll have to check
the
date.
That sounds right.
Yeah. And he's going to do a show on the Galapagos. He's been there about 25 times. So he's really an expert. He's a great guy, and he's a terrific naturalist. So he was one of the leaders of the trip. The other leader of the trip was Don Reapy. And Don Reapy is also very experienced. He was the head resource ranger, I think, for Gateway National Park for many years. And he's very active in the Littoral Society. And the Littoral Society are people who are interested in seacoasts and coasts in general.
He's active in Jamaica Bay.
Right. He's the Jamaica Bay Guardian, in fact. When he retired from the Park Service, he became the Jamaica Bay Guardian. So he has a boat and he patrols around and keeps an eye on that great resource there.
Right. And these two are terrific. If you ever are interested in making some kind of a trip, whether it's in the New York area or one of these more distant trips, I don't think we can recommend them highly enough. They really know everything, and they're wonderful guides.
Right. And the third guide was Mike Battini, I think his name is. And he's a local guy, lives out on the east end of Long Island, and we have him to thank for laying out all the trails on the east end of Long Island. And in fact, he put out a very nice book called Trails of the East End of Long Island, and another one, I think it's called Paddle Trails for canoes and kayaks out the east end.
I don't know if there was a book that he had that was beautifully illustrated.
On the walking dunes.
Yes,
the sand
on the walking dunes. Just beautiful. Also, a very knowledgeable person.
Yeah. So we had three good leaders, and you may say, why did you go out? Well, first of all, let's tell everybody where Montauk is, because not everybody lives in the metro area. I have some new listeners from California that I met in Turkey, So if you picture Long Island, which is adjacent to New York City, and it's some of it is part of New York City, Long Island is a fish-shaped island.
Running east to west.
Right, east to west. The western end consists of Brooklyn and Queens, which are two of the boroughs of New York City. And as you go away from the city out east, it becomes more and more rural. And now that they've saved a lot of open land because wineries have opened up, it's a great area to go even in the winter, as we're going to talk to you about today. This was a cold, wintry day, but we did a lot of walks and in the evening lectures in the evening.
Well, let me just finish what you said. Montauk is at the eastern end of the island. There's a fork. And when I was a kid, we had a little boat on Long Island Sound, and we would sail, because one side is the ocean, one side is the sound, which is inland. And it was a really big deal to go to Montauk.
It was a long trip.
That was as far as you could go with a little boat. Right. And that took a couple of days. And it took us, a couple of hours to drive out there. Yeah.
Did you camp going out?
No, we stayed on the boat. My boat had beds and a kitchen and everything. Oh, it was 26 feet long. It wasn't that long, but it had everything inside it.
Oh, good. Yeah, so as Carol said, there are two forks. That's why the Indians called it Palmanok, which means fish-shaped island.
And you are a fountain of information.
Well, that's because I'm an old guy. So the two forks, the North Fork is Orient Point, which is opposite Connecticut.
Right.
And the South Fork is Montauk.
Right, and the South Fork is on the ocean.
The North Fork is on the Sound. Long Island Sound.
Right.
So it's a great place. Fishermen love it out there. The fishing is terrific. And it's a great place to go on a vacation. It's a little expensive in the summer, but off-season, it's not that expensive. We stayed in this great old hotel called the Montauk Manor, which is... It was very nice,
And the lighthouses are very famous. If you look online, the Orient Point Light is very famous, as is the Montauk Lighthouse. And we were looking for harbor seals right under the Montauk Lighthouse, right on the beach there. Excuse me. Okay, yeah. So we walked to look at the seals. I guess we took several trips, so let's maybe talk about them in order.
Yeah, so the first one was the seal haul-out hike.
Right. Which, we showed you, we have pictures of the trees and we have pictures of the markings on the trail. If you've never walked a trail in the woods, what they do is they put a yellow or a brightly colored sticker on the tree above your head level. And you can see it from a distance because everything was covered with snow. So in many places you really couldn't see the trail, but you look for that colored marker and it tells you you're going in the right direction. If you don't see the marker, you go back the other way. I posted a very funny tree that had two arrows facing one another. Right. I have no idea what that meant.
That means coming and going.
Very confusing. Yeah. Right. And there's a picture of Bernie and I at the entrance to the trails where you will notice if you read the sign, it says that there's shotguns allowed this time of year, but not on the... We read it very carefully when we saw that, but it said not on the weekend.
Right. So, no hunting on the weekend.
Right.
Right.
So we walked through these woods, which were very beautiful, and over some frozen streams and little bridges, and very, very lovely, to the beach where we went to see the harbor seals. And Bernie has seen them and put a picture of a harbor seal on the page for the program, although it is not from the last weekend when we were out there.
No, it's not. But it's from, I don't remember where it's from, but every time I've gone out there, except this last weekend, I've seen harbor seals. Now, the problem was that we went out a little too early. You can only see them at low tide because they come out to bask in the sun on the rocks. They're called haul-out sites because they haul themselves out of the water and they love the sunshine, keeps them warm and all that. But we went a little too early, and Don said we had to go early because the snow was coming in the afternoon, and he didn't know if we'd be able to get out at all. So as it turned out, we got there a little too early. But harbor seals are, I might as well talk about the harbor seals now, right? Yeah, so harbor seals are becoming more and more common. Years ago, they were very common, and then what happened, I think, through pollution and hunting, their numbers went down. But now, since the Mammal Protection Act which takes care of the United States, they are making a comeback. Mm-hmm. And because of us cleaning up the waters, there's less pollution in the waters, and therefore there's more food for the seals.
Now, when you were growing up, were there seals in Long Island Sound?
No, never saw one.
Because I remember we used to see dolphins.
Yeah.
But we never saw seals.
Well, the reason you never saw them is that they come down in the winter. This is the southern... It used to be the southern edge of their range, even though now they're spotting them all the way down to Georgia.
Round. But aren't they also seeing them all year round out there?
Well, mostly in the wintertime, I think. Because what happens is these seals live mostly in colder waters, north of Canada, off the coast of Canada, Greenland, and up into the Arctic. Mm. But in the wintertime, they come down because Long Island Sound never freezes off.
Right, it gets too cold up there.
Yeah, it's too cold, so they come down to Long Island Sound. They're like going to the beach for the winter. And all these rocks around there.
Right, we have a picture of the rocks.
For the place for them to haul out. And hauling out is very important for their lifestyle. It's not that they're just doing it to the sun. They do it because when they're down on Long Island, it's shortly after the babies are born. Mm-hmm. And the babies want to come out of the water also, and the moms nurse them for, I think, 3 or 4 months. And the milk is very rich, and they grow very rapidly. But they molt. They don't molt like crabs do, who molt their whole skin. They molt their fur. Mm. So they come out and they molt on the haul-out sites to grow new fur. Because you know what happens to the fur? It sort of wears out. Mm. And so they have to regenerate their fur. And all seals do it. I saw elephant seals in Antarctica that were out on the beach because they were molting, and all kinds of seals do it.
That's interesting.
So...
I guess is it shedding
it's
like
shedding.
A cat? It's
yes.
more like that, right?
It's shedding, but the fur comes off in big clumps.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because
the cats, too, the same thing in big clumps?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes you see a funny-looking seal with partially molted and partially not, and they look like, they're really losing it. Mm-hmm. But it's just what they do every year, every winter.
Right, because they need a substantial coat. Their coat has to really be replenished in order to stay warm.
Right, they need a very thick coat. And I don't know if you remember, but many years ago, women wore sealskin coats.
Yes, I was just thinking about sealskin coats,
Okay, but there's no more seal hunting in the United States, except for if they are considered a danger for fisheries, okay? Seals get caught in a lot of gill nets, which they use for catching fish, and they die needlessly. But a lot of the fishermen claim that the seals get too many fish. So they're allowed to hunt the seals around the fishery if they can prove that the seals are taking too much of a catch. And we were up in Canada on, was it Grand Manan Island? One of the islands off the coast of New Brunswick where they're fish farming salmon. Mm-hmm. They had this huge facility. And the guy said, our biggest problem is seals because they can cut through the nets and get the salmon and let the salmon out.
So what do they do with the seals that they catch?
Maybe they kill them. They kill them.
I mean, they kill them.
Yeah, they maybe use them for meat.
They make
people
little jackets
seals.
Or something?
I mean,
probably.
Yeah. But they're allowed to kill them if they're a threat to their industry. Mm. And that holds the same for Norway and Greenland and all in the Baltic countries. It's the same thing. They don't have as stringent regulation as we do with the Mammal Protection Act. They can kill them anytime they want.
Right.
But so the population of seals, in spite of that limited hunting, they're doing very well. And they also get diseases, and they get sick and all that.
Sure.
And there's an aquarium in Riverhead called, I think it's called Aquarius. It's about 10 years old now. It's a terrific facility. And as part of the aquarium, they have a mammal rescue station there. Mm-hmm. So if you see a mammal that looks like it's in distress, like a whale, stranded on the beach, or a seal by itself who looks like it's having problems, you can call the mammal rescue station and they'll come and check it out. And if it's just a seal who's okay, they'll leave it alone. But if it looks like it has a disease or a fever or something wrong with it, they'll take it to their facility, which is part of the aquarium. They have these big tanks for them to swim around in. And they have vets and all that and see if they can cure them. Because they come down with a disease that's like... distemper, like dogs get. It's a virus. And sometimes it kills them. So they're mammals. They're like us. warm-blooded. The moms nurse the pups. And they're beautiful animals, and a lot of fun to see.
I wish I had seen one.
Well, we'll have to try it again, Carol.
I mean, I've seen them other places, but...
Yeah.
All right. So, and then the beach was very interesting.
Tell us about the beach. Well, we took a beach walk.
We saw the beach this time, and then we took a beach walk in the afternoon, which was also very beautiful. The beach, I have a picture of some of the brownish rocks on the beach, and this is also an area where the glacier passed through, right? So right. Bernie knows all about this. He will tell you about it. We picked up, and Mickey did a walk on the beach that we went on, which was very interesting, where we picked up things on the beach, and he talked at great length about them and told us everything we would possibly want to know about them. And we photographed a couple of things that we picked up with Mickey on the beach. One was a crystal of feldspar, which I photographed, the photograph looks like a rectangle, but I would never know it was a crystal until he pointed it out. He says he thinks of it like a crushed shoebox, because it's been under pressure and knocked around for, I don't know, millions of years probably. But there's a lot of feldspar. About 60% of the Earth's crust is made up of feldspar. And the origin, I like the etymology of it. Feldspar, feld is from field, and spar is from spath, which means a rock that doesn't contain ore.
Okay.
So that's interesting.
And the definition of an ore is a valuable mineral found in the ground.
Right.
It becomes an ore when we start to mine it.
That's right.
We don't mine it, it's not an ore, it's just a mineral.
And feldspar, they crystallize from magma, right? This is an area that I don't know anything about, and it's immediately very complicated to even read about it.
Yeah, but Mickey makes it sound
easy,
simple.
Right.
He's a terrific educator.
But it crystallizes in both, I'm just going to read this little tiny bit, in both intrusive and extrusive igneous rocks as veins. And it's also present in many types of metamorphic rock. Now, whatever that means, that's basics of feldspar. They're also found in sedimentary rock. And the part that I do understand is it's one of several abrasives, at least according to the internet, used in a cleanser like Bonami.
Oh, it could be. Yeah,
it's ground up very fine.
Yeah, I hadn't heard about that.
It's an abrasive.
Yeah. Okay,
that's my knowledge about feldspar.
Okay,
over to Bernie.
Okay, well, we're not going to go into geology too much today, but just what Carol said—that all of the Northeast was covered by an ice sheet about 10,000 years ago, 12,000-15,000 years ago, and the ice sheet people call a glacier. It's a glacier really only if it goes through a valley. If it's spread out a wide distance, then it's called an ice sheet. And this glacier or ice sheet covered the whole northern part of the United States as far south as Long Island.
I've heard this many times. I just find it, I can't retain it because I find it so hard to imagine.
Yeah. Okay, I'll do a show on the glacier.
Okay.
Okay, we have to stop now with the glacier. And just think of the glacier advancing on New York City. And the glacier was 1,000 feet thick at that time.
We'll be back with more about the glacier.
Right, so... Go upstairs and look out the window and see if it's coming. Hi, this is Bernie Wides and Carol Butler back on the air again for the second half of this show about Montauk. And for you folks, as I said, don't live in the metropolitan area, take out your map or go online to Google and get a map of metropolitan New York, and you'll see Long Island sticking out north, going northeast of New York City. And we were way out at the south tip, right, as Carol said, right near the lighthouse.
Now, we will talk more about the glacier. We're going to do a whole show about the glacier.
On glaciers, glaciation.
Right. And because I've done a lot of research on the ice ages, and it's all very interesting stuff. So we'll talk about that.
Right.
So let's stick with the beach, because we found a couple of other very interesting things on the beach. We found an egg case, and we found a moon snail. And the egg case, I have a photograph of the egg case on the website, so you can see it. I took photographs of the moon snail, but it really just looks like a snail.
Right.
And in the spirit of not crowding the page, I didn't include the moon snail. But
we'll do the moon snail another time, too. Moon snail is interesting. I think it's a carnivorous snail, but I have to check on that fact, so don't take that for fact. But it has a very interesting egg case also. It makes a collar that looks like a gray material, and you find the collars on the beach.
You find the collars separate from the snail?
Yeah, okay, on the beach. But the one we will talk about is the one that we found on the beach, and it's called a mermaid's purse or the devil's purse.
It's really interesting.
And it's the egg case of the skate. And skate is a cousin of rays.
Mm-hmm.
Most people know about rays, but the cousin of the rays are skates. And skates,
I think of a manta ray.
That's
a particular type.
Right.
But
we don't have manta rays in the Northeast.
Everybody knows about mantas.
Right. They're these huge, beautiful rays.
Right.
Now you can see them in aquariums really nicely. They're beautiful. They're huge. But we have a local skate on Long Island called the Little Skate, and then there's one called the Clear Nose Skate. And we found the egg case of this skate. And what makes it interesting is when you look at it, it looks like something sinister. It's black, and it has four prongs coming out the ends, almost like horns.
Right.
Okay? And it washes up on the beach, and the egg case was empty.
Right.
Because if it wasn't empty, it would still be in the water, because the embryo would be inside it. So what the skates do is, the male will fertilize the eggs in utero, internal fertilization, and then the female will lay the eggs in this special case.
Is there one egg in the case or a lot of them?
It depends on the species. Mm. But this one, the little skate, is one embryo in it.
Because that's a good size.
Yeah.
That case that you see in the photograph is a couple of inches. It's 2-3 inches long.
Yeah, but as I looked it up, it showed pictures of one embryo in it. And some of them have two or three embryos in it, or babies. So why is the egg case that shape? Okay, the reason that it's that shape, it has those little protrusions, like little horns or little hooks. That's so it will get stuck on the bottom somewhere. After the female lays the eggs, it drops to the bottom. Well, it's a bottom fish anyhow, skates. And skates are related to sharks and rays. Mm-hmm. They're all in the same family. They're called cartilaginous fish, because they don't have bones. Like if you go to a fish restaurant and get a whole fish and you have the center bone and all that, like...
They don't have a hard
like
skull.
Like mackerel and all that. They have similar, but it's made of cartilage.
Right.
And the cartilage is like the material that's wearing out in my knee.
Right, or in your nose is cartilage.
In your nose is cartilage. Right. So it's very flexible, but it's very tough cartilage. It's very flexible, but it's very strong. So that's the classification they're in. They're a cartilaginous fish as opposed to a ray fin fish. We won't go into all that biology now. So anyhow, what the interesting thing is, the shape of this egg case, and it's designed to get caught on the bottom somewhere, but it's, I would say, aerodynamically shaped, except it's underwater. It's like the cross-section of an airplane wing, if you look at it from the side.
Right.
And what happens is there are little holes in the front of the case that you can't see once it dries out, and little holes in the back of the case. And the water flows along and flows through these little holes, through the egg case, and then out the other end. And that's to bring fresh oxygenated water to the developing embryo.
Interesting. And so then how does the embryo come out?
It breaks through the case.
Like through a cocoon?
No, it slits like at the ends. Like a chrysalis.
Like a pupa. Yeah.
And the babies come out. I've never seen that, but that's what I understand happens.
Right, so this one wasn't broken. We didn't, I don't...
No, but there was nothing in it. I mean, if the embryo was still in there, you could smell it, like, the, you know, deteriorating. So maybe the embryo was out and we just didn't notice it. There's an opening. Yeah, we didn't really take a close look. But that's an interesting thing. And just goes to show you that anytime you walk along the seashore, winter, summer, spring, fall, there are always interesting things to find. And they, if you can go with a naturalist or somebody has a lot of knowledge, it always makes it interesting.
Right.
And that's why it's great to go with Mickey, because he knows everything there is to know. And he even told us the sex life of rockweed. Remember
that? Yes, he did.
We won't go into that. It's a long story about the male and female cells and the rockweed. And rockweed is an algae. So here's a sexual algae right on the beach. So there's a lot, million stories, as Mickey would say,
about the seashores. We just stood there picking stuff up, and he described it and talked about it in great detail. It was really interesting.
So we should should describe this beach, Carol, because we were on a low tide, and it was a lot of cobbles and boulders on the beach.
They were pretty big size because it was hard to walk.
Right.
Once you got down to the beach, you had to walk over these boulders, stones that were, I don't know, some of them could have been a foot, some of them were 8 inches.
The size of melons, I would say, and some of them were the size of watermelons.
Yes, and so it was hard to walk on them because you really couldn't get good solid footing. And then once you got over the strip of these big stones, then it was sand, and then you were at the water.
So if you noticed, there's a gradation in those boulders and rocks on the shore. The biggest ones were up closest to the dunes or the cliffs.
Right,
and it
up.
Got smaller and smaller as you went down to the edge of the sea, and then it was sand.
Then it becomes sand,
And where does the sand come from?
So why does that happen, right?
Right. First, where does the sand come from? The sand comes from these boulders and rocks that get eroded away from banging against each other, rubbing against each other, and weathering. They become sand.
Right.
And if you pick up a handful of sand, you'll see a lot of feldspar in it.
Right. And we could see, and a lot of brown, right?
And brown. If you see brown, it's probably feldspar, because that's a very common mineral.
That's a common type of feldspar.
Yeah, and the other minerals that you'll see in sand could be anything. A lot of quartz and a lot of mica and feldspar, and sometimes there's iron crystals in it, magnetite.
Silica.
So sand is really interesting, but we won't talk too much about sand.
See, we can talk about all kinds of things.
Right. So where do those big boulders come from? They come from the glacier. The glacier came across from northeast to southwest across Long Island, but only on the north shore of Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
So in the north shore of Long Island has these hills, glacial hills, all the way from Montauk, which they're cliffs at the beach because they're eroding away. And as they erode away, these cobbles and boulders are falling out of the sand, forming on the beach because the glacier was like a bulldozer. It pushed along stuff in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it rode over, but a lot of it had just pushed along, and these boulders got tumbled and rounded off. And then when the glacier retreated, it dropped all of it on the beach. So if you look at a topographical map of the metropolitan area, you'll see that if you go from Montauk all the way along the north shore of Long Island, it's all hilly, okay? And those hills extend all the way into Queens, and all the way into Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And you folks that live in Brooklyn, if you know Eastern Parkway goes on top of the glacial till or the terminal moraine where the glacier stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And if you continue across the Narrows into Staten Island, these hills continue in Staten Island. And they sort of peter out when you get past Staten Island into New Jersey. So that was the front of the glacier. When the glacier came there, it stopped advancing to the south and started to melt and retreated. But it did it a few times.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a few glacial moraines on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what these big cobbles and boulders are. And sometimes you see these huge rocks on the beaches, North Shore Beach on Long Island, glacial erratics. They were dragged there by the glacier from somewhere else. They could be big as a Volkswagen.
Yeah.
So it's really, really interesting. So that's just a bit little glacial geology.
It's interesting. And I had also a photograph of a rock
that
I didn't include because it was too much. But there was also a glacial rock. Remember that rock with all the cracks in it?
Right.
The pieces that were
that we saw on the trail.
Yeah, we saw it on the trail.
We saw the top of a big boulder on the trail. Most of it was buried, but pieces of it were breaking off.
Right.
Okay, because you can see how eventually it would end up as sand.
Right.
And what makes them break off? It's weathering.
Right.
The water gets in a crack, the water freezes and pops off a piece of rock.
Right, and you could really, I should have put it on. I had the photograph there, but we just had too many.
Yeah, right.
But
So as I said, it's always interesting to walk in nature in the woods. So as Carol said, we walked through the woods called the Haulout Trail. We got to the dune line, and we walked along that and to the beach, and there's even a little structure there where the seal haul out is.
Right.
So for a little shelter with information
with
about the different sails and
right.
what to look out for. Because
you can get warm in there,
yeah,
too.
It was pretty cold. The seals won't come up on the beach if people right. are there. So these rocks are about 50-100 feet off the shore. It's a right. perfect haul out thing to see. So let's see. Did we cover most of the stuff we saw
on
that trip?
I think so. We'll talk in the next show more about the dunes.
Right.
It was really a terrific trip.
If we have some time left, I also took a picture of, in addition to the egg case, I have a picture with the picture of the skate next to it.
Oh, good.
That the egg case comes from.
Excellent.
Yeah. So we'll put that on the site so you can see what it looks like. Just a little bit more about the harbor seals.
What do we have some time?
Jack, how much time we have left? 4 minutes.
Okay, great.
Okay. So
what's the other kind of seal? She said there were two kinds of seals. One has a flatter nose, one has a longer nose.
A gray seal, was it?
Maybe.
I don't remember
maybe.
The other one. But as I said, seals were hunted for many years for their skin and for their blubber.
Right.
They're like whales. They have a layer of blubber under their fur that mm-hmm. keeps them warm, and they were hunted for oil. They would heat the blubber and make it into oil, like whale oil.
Yes,
you heard about.
Yes,
but there was also seal oil, so they were a valuable thing to hunt. But these days, luckily, nobody hunts them, except certain people have permission to do it, as I said. But I want to talk to the people in California because there's a Pacific
right. yes, I've
harbor
seen,
seal
right.
all up and down the Pacific coast.
Yeah, I've seen them.
It's very common. And just a little funny thing. When we were out on the West Coast a couple of years ago, we stopped in La Jolla, which is a beautiful little town just north of San Diego. And they built a beach for the children there called the Children's Beach. Mm-hmm. What they did, they put a groin out or a jetty in an L shape. So the kids could swim within this protected area because the Pacific sometimes is kind of rough.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the Pacific Ocean is always cold.
Right.
Yeah. So anyhow, in La Jolla, where it's nice and sunny and warm, they built this beach and they called it the Children's Beach. But shortly after they built it, the seals found it.
Mm-hmm.
And now the children can't swim there because the seals are there almost all the time.
Right.
So when I was there, there must have been 50 seals stages of development.
Right. Well, I was in Northern California, Crescent City, visiting my brother-in-law and his wife, and they took me to a dock also, which is seals do their own haul out on this dock, and it's pretty reliable to find a few seals on the dock.
Yeah. So in this part of the world where we live, in the Northeast, the seals are becoming more common. So yeah. You could see seals in New York Harbor now in the winter too, and on other bays and on the North Shore of Long Island, and even the South Shore, sometimes they haul out. So they are becoming what they were in previous years, more and more numerous. So just a little bit
like the deer.
Yes, like the deer.
Not once the hunting is restricted. Oh, I put deer poop on the on the site also.
Okay.
We found these piles of marble-sized poop in let's say a 6-inch across. What I posted was a little more scattered, but we found lots of these sort of puddles of these pellets. And I had a rabbit, so I knew they were too big for a rabbit. Turns out it's deer. So the deer population is a problem now on
yes,
Long
it
Island.
Is.
Because there are so many deer. We saw deer just in the parking lot,
mm-hmm.
and judging from the poop, there are huge amounts of deer in that area.
Yes, and you know, people love deer, and they don't want anything to happen to them, but they periodically now will remove deer from Long Island because
right.
they're really a hazard for drivers and other things. And we have friends on Fire Island. Fire Island is, you know, loaded with deer. And the problem with deer is that they have the tick that mm-hmm. you can get Lyme disease from. So they carry the tick, the American dog tick, which is a bigger tick, but they also have the Lyme disease tick, which is a tiny little one, size of a sesame seed. So that's a problem. But on Long Island, what they do is they tried feeding the deer birth control food.
Right. Oh.
So, and it sort of worked. But I don't know if they had a lot of problems. I don't know how well it's worked on the rest of the island.
They have to keep doing it. They did that with horses too.
Yeah.
Where they're trying to keep the wild horses population down. They were feeding them birth control.
Okay, what a couple of other little things about the seals. they live in the mostly in the intertidal zones. They don't go out into deep ocean much. They'll be within 20 miles of the shore or less. And as I said, the seals on Long Island migrate down in the winter because the waters are not frozen. They're open. They can catch fish. And what do they eat? I have a list here of some of their food. They're known to prey primarily on fish such as menhaden, which are bunkers, which we used to get as kids as bait for bluefish, anchovies, which are a little in the herring family, sea bass, herring, mackerel, cod, whiting, and flatfish, like flounders and fluke, and occasionally upon shrimp, crabs, mollusks, and squid.
Like all those things,
too. Yeah, I know. That they compete with us for food. Yeah. That's it. Okay.
All right, that's the end.
So that's the end of our show today, and next week's show will be a continuation about Montauk Point and the trip and some other walks that we took. We were out there for the weekend.
Right.
So this is Bernie Wides.
And Carol Butler.
And we're signing off the air, and we'll be back next week with part two of Adventures in Montauk.
Right.